How to survive the sinking of the Titanic. Let's say you want to embark on a refreshing cruise into remote seas aboard a ship with a touch of early 20th century elegance. So you travel to Southampton, England on April 10, 1912, and you buy a ticket to New York City on the new state-of-the-art cruise liner from White Star Line, headed out on its maiden voyage. But you're a frugal time traveler, so you elect to travel third class, only £8. That buys you a bunk on F deck, 6 levels below the top. It's about the size of a prison cell, only it's occupied by 4 people rather than just 2. But who cares? All you'll do is sleep in it anyway, and this ship offers world-class amenities to its third-class passengers, who in this era would typically have to stuff themselves into one large, poorly ventilated, and inadequately converted cargo hold. Here, you'll enjoy the relative privacy of a shared bunk, the open air via the lower poop deck, and even have access to the third-class saloon. The first few days of the trip pass unremarkably. You'll venture to the back poop deck for some fresh air, play a card game in the saloon, and then, perhaps in a fit of boredom, finally bother to read the fine print on your ticket. There you'll discover, just beneath the big bold letters, White Star Line, the name of your vessel, RMS Titanic. Don't panic. You still have a few days before the infamous accident, and you need to use them. In the bowels of the Titanic, you'll face a number of daunting obstacles, including logistics, discrimination, and chaos, but the first and perhaps most important problem is one of simple navigation. As a third-class passenger, you're not allowed access to the top deck. That isn't only a matter of inconvenience, it's where the lifeboats are, and while there is an escape path, it's locked, unlabeled, and there have been no escape drills. Most third-class passengers on Titanic have no idea how to navigate the unlabeled labyrinth of passageways, stairwells, and ladders to reach the lifeboats. You'll need to learn. Forget the card games and fresh air. You need to familiarize yourself with the bowels of this ship. Study the deck plan, climb the stairwells, walk the corridors, and if you happen to see a crew member while doing so, perhaps suggest the boat slow down. Because as it is, Titanic is navigating icebergs off the coast of Newfoundland at far too great a speed. At 11:40 p.m. on the moonless night of April 14, 1912, Titanic's lookouts, Frederick Fleet and Reginald Lee, first spotted the 1.5 million ton block of ice when it was only 500 yards in front of the ship. The Titanic, unlike ships in the Royal Navy, steamed without spotlights, so even though the massive block of ice rose more than 100 feet above the water, it remained camouflaged against the dark sky until it was far too late. When Fleet first rang the helm, the 50,000-ton ship was barreling through the North Atlantic Sea at 22 knots. At that speed, it was only 37 seconds from impact. At the call of iceberg, Titanic reversed its engines and executed a hard left turn, but there was not nearly enough time. The maneuver avoided a head-on impact, but at 11:41 p.m., Titanic scraped 300 feet of its front starboard side against the ice. Sleeping on F deck, you'll be one of the closest passengers to the impact, but even so, the jolt will feel relatively benign, perhaps even anticlimactic. One fireman bunked within feet of the collision later claimed to have slept through the incident entirely. "Dead to the wide world," he told investigators. Other, lighter sleepers will describe the impact as a big vibration, a large cable being run out, a grinding crash, crunching and jarring, or like a basket of coals dumped on an iron plate. Because the lurch is so mild, few passengers initially suspect a serious problem, but, of course, there is a serious problem. You're 6 decks below the lifeboats while 7 tons of water pour into the lower holds every second. You need to act. Your first instinct might be to immediately sprint out of your bunk. Don't. You have plenty of time before water floods your section of the ship, and you need to use that time wisely. Instead of running, change into your finest clothing. Put on a tux, a dress, or at the very least, brush your hair. The lifeboats load from the first-class deck, which means for a brief but critical period, they are an invitation-only party you need to crash. It will help if you look the part. Finally, before you depart, put on the life jacket stored above your bunk. Getting dressed will take a few extra minutes, but don't worry. The great ship sinks so slowly you could make an interminable movie out of its demise. More than 2.5 hours will elapse from impact to final foundering, and even more remarkable than the length of its fight against the weight of the frigid North Atlantic Sea is the grace with which she fights it. The Titanic never capsizes, nor even takes on the kind of serious list that would make navigating the ladders and stairwells difficult, or the launch of lifeboats impossible. Remarkably, the Titanic's deck never tilts beyond a few degrees, even as she takes on thousands of tons of water. As a result, you not only have time to dress yourself, but when you do finally make it to the top decks, you won't find the sheer chaos that accompanies most founderings. Instead, you'll find a sociological cocktail of gallantry, cowardice, courage, chivalry, sacrifice, prayer, panic, and even music. The time Titanic takes to sink enables you to escape from even its lowest holds, but it also produces a human drama that partially explains the wreck's infamy. Ships don't often slide so graciously into the sea, especially at the turn of the 20th century. This partially explains why Titanic carried lifeboats for only a third of its capacity. It wasn't as if Titanic's designers couldn't do the math. They simply never expected anyone would survive a shipwreck long enough to use them. Most ships, particularly in that era, sank catastrophically. They capsized, disintegrated, sank within minutes, or listed to such a degree that passengers could barely walk, let alone launch boats. Ship designers and even passengers viewed lifeboats as token nods to safety, akin to how a modern airplane traveler might view their flotation device. It was difficult to envision a scenario where anyone might live long enough to use it, let alone everyone. Given the grim realities of 19th century shipwrecks, a ship equipped with lifeboats for a third of its passengers seemed hopelessly aspirational. But Titanic's architects underestimated their own design. When I asked ship designer and naval architect Jan Erik Wall why Titanic sank in such an unfathomably sturdy way, he told me it was thanks to the nature of the damage and the ship's use of what was then a state-of-the-art system of waterproof bulkheads. Footnote: bulkheads were state-of-the-art in Western shipping, but Chinese ship designers had used them since at least the 5th century. Bulkheads are waterproof walls that run widthwise across a ship's hull to prevent a single gash from flooding the entire boat. To allow passengers and crew to navigate Titanic, the bulkheads had watertight doors that the captain could seal remotely from the bridge. On Titanic, the captain closes these doors immediately after impact, but don't worry, you won't be trapped. Bulkheads don't have ceilings. That would introduce the seriously destabilizing possibility of water trapped at the top of the ship. On Titanic, the bulkheads rise 50 feet from the bottom of the ship, and escape ladders allow sealed-off passengers and crew to climb above them. Of course, a bulkhead without a ceiling has an obvious weakness. If enough sections flood, the weight of the water will drag the tops of the bulkheads beneath the waterline and render the entire system useless. The height of Titanic's bulkheads meant she could flood 4 of her forward sections and still float high enough to keep the tops of the bulkheads above water. Unfortunately, the iceberg sliced holes into 5. Titanic eventually took on 16,000 tons of water. The bow dropped more than 50 feet. Seawater flooded over the top of the 6th bulkhead. And as the investigating commissioner later said, the epitaph of the ship had been written. Footnote: that may not actually be entirely correct. There is a chance you can actually save the ship after it hits the iceberg. It's a small chance. Very small, in fact, and it's remarkably, stupefyingly dangerous, but there is a chance. If you want to try, here's what you need to do. We now know the bulkheads nearly stayed above the waterline, which means if you can prevent approximately 20% of the forward compartments from flooding, you may be able to save the ship. Don't bother trying to plug the holes. Even with the help of the entire crew, that would not have worked, according to the ship's assistant designer, Edward Wilding. Instead, your best chance would be to fill up the flooding sections with enough bulky, lightweight material to displace the heavier volume of water. One rather risky suggestion, proposed in the National Geographic documentary Titanic, The Final Word with James Cameron: gather all 3,500 life jackets on the ship and stuff them into Boiler Room 6 in under 40 minutes. You just might save the ship. If the bulkheads had been a mere 20 feet taller, the ship would have likely survived, according to Wilding. As it was, they merely delayed the sinking by slowing down the flooding between the fifth and sixth bulkheads as the pressure difference between the inside and outside of the ship nearly equalized. For nearly 20 minutes, the flooding inflow slowed to a trickle before the water crested the bulkheads and rushed in anew. The bulkheads don't save the ship, but they do buy you time. Even more critically, they help stabilize the ship's descent. By restricting the water's movement, they reduce what naval architects referred to as the free surface effect, which is water's dangerously destabilizing desire to pile on the listing side of a ship. Had the ship been open-hulled, flooding water would not only have sunk the ship far faster, it would have flipped the 50,000-ton boat within 15 minutes, according to Wilding, and no lifeboats would have ever been launched. Of course, Titanic's slow and steady drop revealed the inequities between passenger classes and the paltry safety precautions taken by the crew. Without any idea of where to go, many third-class passengers moved toward the only open-air section of the boat they know, the back poop deck. Do not do this. Instead, you need to go straight up. You can do so using one of the unannounced evacuation routes. There are two. The first is a normally locked stairwell off the main third-class alleyway. To find it, move from your bunk on F deck, head toward the rear of the ship, and take the first flight of stairs you see. Climb up the stairs and exit into the main working alleyway on the port side, called Scotland Road. From there, use the escape stairs located behind the elevators. These doors are normally locked to prevent lower-class passengers from reaching the upper-class decks, but according to testimony by Titanic's head baker, Charles Jouken, they're open sometime between 12:15 and 12:30 a.m. Even if it's the latter, that still gives you 10 minutes before the first lifeboat launches. If for some reason Jouken is wrong and the gate remains locked, you should abandon it and use the other escape route. Your best chance for a seat on a lifeboat is to arrive early, and after 12:30 a.m., you're running short of time. The secondary escape path is a series of ladders that climb from the forward deck all the way to the top. To get to them, move down the Scotland Road passageway to the forward steerage deck. There on the deck, you'll see ladders leading up the successive levels. Normally, these are gated and guarded, but a few third-class survivors who used these ladders early in the evening later testified that all the crew members did was ask them not to. Apparently, they ignored them. You should too. Once you're on the top level, you'll find lifeboats on both the port and starboard sides readying to launch. Which side you use is important, and the best choice depends on your age and gender. Titanic's crew preferentially load women and children into lifeboats, but passenger manifests suggest the crew on the port side follow this policy far more strictly. At one point, Harold Lowe, the officer loading the port side boats, fires a warning shot from his pistol and declares, "If any man jumps onto the boat, I will shoot him like a dog." Clearly, if you're a woman or below the age of 13, head straight for Officer Lowe. Otherwise, go to starboard. If you can catch a ride on one of these first boats, fantastic. You're saved. But sadly, even if you arrive early, and even if you're dressed in your finest, there's a good chance you won't. And if you haven't made it onto one of the first boats, your odds dim significantly as more and more people arrive and become increasingly desperate. If you still haven't found a ride by 1:15 a.m., steel your nerves and head back down into the bowels of the sinking ship. We know from eyewitness testimony that just after 1 a.m., while loading lifeboat 6 to half capacity, Second Officer Charles Lightoller ordered Bosun Alfred Nichols and six other men to go below deck and open the gangway doors. Footnote: Lightoller never boarded a lifeboat himself, but he survived the frigid water by swimming onto an overturned raft and waiting until morning for rescue. Almost 30 years later, he aided the English evacuation at Dunkirk by navigating his private sailboat across the English Channel and crowding 127 British soldiers onto his 21-person yacht. His role in the evacuation is dramatized by Mark Rylance in the 2017 movie Dunkirk. These doors have a dual purpose. At port, they allow passengers to directly access the lower decks from the dock, but they also serve as escape doors during an emergency. They were designed to allow steerage passengers to escape into the lifeboats without having to climb to the top deck. It was a good plan, but not only did no one ever tell the passengers, Officer Lightoller was the last person to see Nichols or any of his men alive. Whether Nichols ever opened the gangway doors remains one of the wreck's great mysteries, and no passengers ever escaped through them. Nevertheless, there is some reason to believe you can. Submersibles examining Titanic's wreckage have found the gangway doors on Titanic's forward port D deck wide open. It's possible flooding water or the tremendous pressure applied by the ocean's depths blew these doors open, but it's also possible that Nichols or one of his men managed to open them before drowning, and they went unused simply because no passengers knew of their existence. If you arrive at D-Deck when Nichols does, presumably by 1:30, you may find an open door and a steady stream of half-filled lifeboats. Thomas Jones, the crew member in charge of Lifeboat 8, will later testify that he would have rescued passengers at the gangway doors had he seen any. If they had been down there, we could have taken them, he told the investigating commission. I would suggest you be there. Of course, because no passengers escape using these doors, the viability of this exit remains somewhat speculative. There's a chance you'll find no Nichols and locked doors. Give them a few minutes, but if the doors aren't open by 1:45, you should wait no longer. Head back up. D-Deck will soon dip below the waterline. By this time, your chance for a ride on a lifeboat has gone from unlikely to remote. Footnote: the ship carried 4 collapsible life rafts, too. Raft C left at 1:40 with 44 of 47 seats taken. Raft D left at 2:05 with 25 of 47 seats taken. The crew never launched rafts A and B, but they do float off Titanic as it sinks. At 2 a.m., the surge to get on the few that remain grows so intense that the crew members have to lock arms to hold back the crowd. You aren't going to get a seat, which means you're going to have to swim. Fortunately, that isn't the death sentence it might seem. Lifeboats plucked at least 5 swimmers from the water and many more from 2 overturned lifeboats. With the proper preparation, you still have a chance. When the Titanic band plays its final song, perhaps either Songe de Ton or Nearer My God to Thee, eyewitness testimony is mixed, that's your cue to head to the very stern of the boat. Move all the way to the back railing and hold on. Titanic's bow will soon dip deep into the water, gradually lifting the stern so high its propellers clear the waterline. Once the boat gains approximately 20 degrees of tilt, it cracks in half. The bow drops to the bottom of the ocean, and the stern rises again. As this happens, use your vantage point to look for the nearest lifeboats. According to the testimony of survivor Jack Thayer, most of the boats float some 400 to 500 yards away. Pick the nearest one, then locate and remember the stars above it. The lifeboat will be too far away and too low in the water to see once you're swimming, so you'll need some means of navigation. Before the final plunge, shed the fancy clothes, tighten your life jacket, and if you have a warm hat, put it on. As you hit the water, you might worry the sinking boat will create a sucking vortex that would draw you into the depths, but survivors report no such thing. Jauken, who stayed on the boat until the end, later claimed his hair was never even mussed. Still, your first moments in the frigid sea will be some of the most dangerous. The water is 27 degrees Fahrenheit, about as cold as any naturally occurring water on this planet. When you enter, you're going to experience a cold shock response that causes a gasp even if your head is underwater. The inhale is uncontrollable, like your knee springing back to a doctor's reflex hammer, so replicating Jauken's entry is important. Keep your head above the water. Do not swan dive or jump. Instead, try to slip in. The freezing temperatures may also cause you to hyperventilate. Stay calm, slow your breathing, allow the life jacket to keep you afloat, and the shock should pass within 60 seconds. Then, find your guiding star and start swimming. Swim at a pace you can maintain for 10 to 15 minutes, but work hard. The more heat you produce, the longer you'll stay alive. In this water, your body temperature will drop below 80 degrees after 45 minutes, at which point you'll enter cardiac arrest. But in reality, you have far less time than that. A creeping numbness that begins on the tips of your toes and fingers will spread quickly. After only a few minutes, your hands and feet will numb as blood retracts to your body's vital organs. After 15 minutes, your arms and legs will numb to the point of incapacitation. At that point, without the life jacket, you would drown. You have one on, so you won't, but it will merely prolong the inevitable. No one will come to rescue you. You need to swim the entire 500 yards within the 15 minutes that you'll have use of your arms and legs, or you'll bob about helplessly in your life jacket while you await cardiac arrest. Nevertheless, 500 yards in 15 minutes is manageable. At the International Ice Swimming Championships, the best usually swim that distance in fewer than 7. If you stay focused and don't become lost or entangled, you should make it. The lifeboat should have plenty of open seats, as almost all were severely underfilled, but be careful as you climb out of the water. You may experience a dangerous decline in arterial blood pressure, particularly if you stand or exert yourself once aboard. At least one Titanic swimmer died of a heart attack after a lifeboat pulled them from the water. Warm yourself as best you can and wait for the rescue ship Carpathia that arrives at 4 a.m. Aboard the RMS Carpathia, you can uneventfully complete your voyage to New York City. Once you arrive, pay a visit to the owner of the Titanic, Mr. J.P. Morgan himself. He lives at 219 Madison Avenue. Ask for your £8 back.